Welcome everyone to our second author coaching session of June 2021. This is for the Nonfiction Writers University and the Inspired Creator Community, but we had some issues earlier in the month. Not sure if it was a mistake on our part by putting in a wrong link or whether it was Zoom, because as I had shared, I had a session right after our author coaching session and I couldn't get in for the same reason. It said there was another session going on. So who knows, doesn't matter. I like to deliver what I said I was gonna deliver. So I scheduled an extra session. So this, for those of you who haven't been here before, is your time. I don't come with an agenda. I do not have anything that I plan to teach you. It's your chance to ask me questions and actually get coached. So if you were going to hire me one-on-one to do author coaching with you, this is what it would be like. We would be together, you'd ask your questions. I would give you resources, support you in whatever way I can, educate you, give you things to go do, whatever. So that's what we do here. And we just do round robin. And everybody gets to ask usually more than one question. It depends how many people show up. And we still may have some others. I know Greg, Jerry knows Greg. Greg is driving, said he was going to try to be on, but you know, we never know. Sometimes it's Jerry and I, and sometimes there are, you know, eight people. Never know. So since it's small right now, it's good because you get to ask lots of questions. So with all that said, I'm going to shut up and see who has questions for me. And this is primarily about writing and publishing and blogging. But if you have a, you know, if you're stuck, like you're just not writing consistently or whatever, that's pertinent too. And especially as Inspired Creator Community member, you know, that's always on our mind. But here, I'm just interested in helping you write and publish and make a difference.
So. Awesome. Awesome. So, I have lots of questions. So awesome. Let me know when I can start.
Don't be shy. Just dive in and everybody benefits from all the questions. And we do, it's not really a mastermind, but like if somebody has something, a resource to add, then feel free to you can always put it in the chat and ask if somebody wants the resource or whatever, but usually I'll just let you offer it. Anyway, go ahead, Rita.
Okay, well, I guess I'll start by saying I've written my book, but I, as a new writer, I'm unsure how to navigate the publishing end of it. I'm a teacher of almost 30 years. I'm a professor in the autism and behavioral science program. I have four children, one of whom has autism. So our story is about our journey with autism. And my book would also benefit at the college level in the program that I teach in, because it's really about family and working with families and teams and that kind of thing. So it really starts, it's a story that I would have loved to have had at the beginning of our journey. And my son is now 25. So with that being said, I've opened myself up completely in this book. I mean, the wounds and everything are showing. It is right from the heart. It is, completely honest and open. And I'm very proud of what I have. I just, again, I'm new at this and I don't know how to navigate. Also, I need to preface it with the important thing that at the beginning of the pandemic, my twin daughters, like I said, I have four children. My twin daughters started a TikTok account and it accidentally turned into my son's account because the fans were going crazy over seeing him online, seeing an adult with autism and how we live and how he functions. And he's he just blew up to over 500,000 followers on there. And on YouTube, not YouTube, on Instagram as well. He's got quite a following. And the majority of the people want to hear our story of how we got to where we're at and how it's a lot of the moms and families of, you know, starting out at the beginning of having a diagnosis with autism. So I guess my questions are many as far as publishing. I want to do the traditional route is what I really would prefer. I've also was involved in a co-authoring a project that just hit international best-selling list. So I guess I can call myself that. I feel like
an anthology?
What's that?
was it an anthology, one of these ones you contribute a chapter to?
Yes, yes, yes. And
pay for it, or was it?
Yes, we all contributed, and we all were, you know, accepted into it. And I mean, I thought it was a great idea to kind of boost my reputation in a way. I'm not sure if it will or won't, but
the organization is how that'll be perceived.
Okay,
a lot of people do that. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that it sold well is great. Most of them do. Most of them have a marketing plan in place to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but anything you do to get out there is great. So here's what I'm going to tell you right off the bat. The fact that your son's TikTok, I know it started out as your daughter's, but that your son's TikTok and Instagram have blown up and have tons of followers mm-hmm. is a good reason to approach a publishing house.
Yeah.
I would definitely try traditional publishing first. The other reason is because you said you'd like the book, that the book would be something that could be used in, you know, at the university level.
Yes.
So if you want to get into universities, while you can do it with a self-published book, you're going to have a lot higher likelihood of the universities paying attention to you when it's traditionally published.
Yes.
And that is an avenue to have mentioned in a book proposal that you are going to be able to do what they call special sales. Okay. So special sales is when you have different outlets beyond bookstores where you can sell your book. Right. So, you know, it could also be maybe there are autism groups or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And your memoir, it's written, you've written it about your son and your experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And has he contributed to it at all, or he's not
able to? No, he has limited language. So he's not high functioning by no means. So, I mean, as I'm sure you're well aware, autism is quite a spectrum. So,
right. Well, I didn't know. So, you have so many options. Like my mind's just going crazy. Like for instance, okay. Your daughters who started that TikTok account, like you could help them write a book from their perspective, right?
Yeah.
You know, you've written a memoir, but you could also write a straight prescriptive nonfiction book that tells people all the things, like you said, that you wish you'd known.
Yeah.
Right. So you have a lot of options for how, because when you approach a traditional publisher, they want what's called spin-off books. Meaning you don't want a one book wonder. They want somebody that if they invest in them, they know that you can write more than one book.
Yeah. Well, I've also thought about like children's book, like my son will be an uncle one day and he's a brother. And, you know, what is that like? Like, so that has come to mind.
Yeah. See, these are wonderful ideas. And mm-hmm. so I think you have a lot of potential to get picked up by a publisher, even though you aren't well known, since your son is, you know, the book can be, you know, he can hold the book and show people when the time comes. And
absolutely.
Right. So I would definitely try the traditional publishing route first, but what you're going to need to do, since the book is written now, and what that's good because most memoir, the publishers want to see the whole manuscript. You may put only most proposals for nonfiction have a couple chapters, like 30 pages or 25 pages, but you want to be able to tell them the memoir is written. So that's good. So now your job is to work on a book proposal.
Yeah. And I'm at that, but it's harder than I thought. Like I'm struggling with the book proposal because I know this is like the sales pitch.
It is. So this is, people don't realize that it can take as long to work on that book proposal as it does to write the book. It's super important. Of course, the query letter comes first. It's your foot in the door with a literary agent, but then they need to look at the proposal. So in the Nonfiction Writers University, you have a copy of the Easy Schmeasy book proposal template.
Okay.
You also have a copy of my ebook, the Nonfiction Book Proposal Demystified, which goes really nicely with the template. There are some things about the template that I really need to change, but it'll give you a good start because it's in Microsoft Word. You can just delete the cover. And then I just made all the comments about what you do in track changes. So you can just delete them, you know, accept them or whatever, and use that document. And then of course there's my book, The Author Training Manual, but if you want, you know, you've already written your book. The Author Training Manual takes you through what I now I call it the author training process, but it started out being called the proposal process, because basically you're using the book proposal to analyze your idea and make it better, make it more marketable. Yeah. So that's where, you know, if you hadn't written your book, I'd say start there. However, it does explain each section of a book proposal, but more from the, I'm going to analyze my idea and make it marketable perspective. Whereas the ebook I told you about will lead you through each section, and it's super short. So yeah, it is hard. I would plan on putting it together and then having somebody edit it for you who knows about book proposals. Okay. And I can do that for you. I know a couple other people who do it. Okay. So, and I say that not to drive you to me. Like I said, I know other people that I could send you to. I don't care where you go, but it is your sales document. And yeah, it's a marketing document that, and a business document. And most writers are not very business oriented. And the thing is that book proposal gets turned into your book's business plan in the publishing house. They actually extract information from it. The overview might end up as part of your back cover copy. You know, they're going to look at competitive titles, and they can get all the statistics like sales figures mm-hmm. on them, which you can't, but they look at all of that. That all becomes part of what they're using, not just to determine whether they want to buy the book, but whether, you know, how they're going to market it, all of that, or not really market it, but, you know, their angle on getting it out into the market.
Right. Okay, great. Awesome. I would love for you to look at it, see what I have so far anyways, and if I'm on the right path.
Okay. So I'll shoot me an email and I'll send you the link to, or you can just go, I think if you go to on any of my sites, well, if you're on ninaamir.com under writing and publishing, if you go to like services or something, you're looking for a proposal critique or whatever. But on the Write Nonfiction Now site, it's under services, I think.
Okay. And, yeah, I'll find it.
But if you can't find it, just email me. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So does that get you going for right now?
Yeah. I mean, unless there's any other advice of that you feel would be important to do or.
Right now I'd be working on the proposal and getting feedback on that. So, you know, where you need to beef up your marketing plan, where you need to, you know, maybe beef up the platform. I mean, it sounds like with your son, you actually have a platform, but he's not going to be the one marketing the book. So you need to think about your platform. And so if there are things you need to be doing to boost your platform, that's what I'd be looking at.
Okay, great.
And you can come around and you can ask more questions. I just want to make sure I get to everybody. But the other thing is just, you can keep coming back here. And I tell everybody all the time, use the Facebook page. If you use the Facebook page to ask me questions in between sessions, I'm happy to answer them. It's just nobody uses them.
Okay.
Jerry's using it recently as accountability, but it's just quiet in the Facebook group. So, you know, but ask questions and I'll come in and I'll answer them and then come back here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so thank you.
If you have another question, you will come back around. Right now there are only three of you, so we should have plenty of time for more questions. All right, who else can I help today?
I'll go. So with that whole discussion, do you, because I haven't written anything yet, do you recommend starting with the book proposal first?
So, it isn't that you start specifically with the proposal, but what you want to do is you want to do go through an evaluation process. Like I said, just making your idea as good as it can be, as marketable as it can be. If you, and again, I'm not pushing you to buy my book or anything like that, but if you get a copy of the author training manual, you'll see that it takes you through every part of the book proposal in order to accumulate the information that you will need for the book proposal, but you're doing it from the perspective of how do I write the best book I can write and one that people want to buy? Because if they don't buy it, then, you know, it's not selling, obviously. So, it's my recommendation that you do a loose proposal. And I just call it at this stage a business plan. Mm-hmm. You go through the process of of determining your market and of looking at the books that will be competitive or complementary to yours in order to see what did they do well? What did they not do well? What, you know, what has been done before? What, how can I do a better job than, you know, so this one is the best, you know, the best seller in the whole category and, or on the topic. And what did they do well? And what didn't they do well? Or what did they leave out? Right. So you're looking at how can I improve my idea? Because just because you have an idea and people tell you it's good doesn't mean that it's going to sell. So we want to look at all of that. Right. And so once you've gone through all that, then when you have looked at the market and who you're actually writing for, because there may be more markets than you think. I mean, I had a guy, Jerry may have heard me tell this story before. I had a therapist who was working with me one-on-one, and he writing a book for said single moms. And as we talked, it turned out that, you know, he started talking about his clientele and he's like, well, some of them aren't actually single parents. They're parents who have a spouse who's not involved. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if it was for men too. I think it was for women, but in any case, he was like, some of them, like the husband's just never there, or the husband doesn't want to be a parent. Like, I mean, he wants to be a parent, but he doesn't want to hear it.
Right.
Involved in the actual day-to-day parenting. And so he said, they are also single moms. And so we had to revamp his book, the angle of his book and the stories he told and all of that, because his market was not just women with no husbands. So this came out through our exploration. It wasn't something that was top of mind for him. You know, I had a book idea that I pitched long ago and had people come back to me. So it was a book on the Jewish Sabbath. Well, kind of, not exactly, but it was related to the Jewish Sabbath. And I had, you know, one literary agent say to me, let's make this just for women because all Jews is too broad, even though that's a very small, the Jewish market is very small. But they were, she was like, let's narrow it to the women because they buy books anyway. They're the ones buying the books. And so that was her idea. Then I had a publisher contact me and say, can you reangle this and make it for every religion that celebrates a Sabbath? Mm. So you see, one's broader, one's clearer. The point being that they're thinking about it from the perspective of how can we make this book the most marketable, right? And whether you self-publish or you traditionally publish, that's what you want, because if it's not marketable, it's not going to sell. And if it doesn't sell, nobody reads it. Nobody reads it. You know, it, maybe it wasn't a waste of time, but you're not making the difference you want to make.
Right.
So, yeah. And out of all this analysis, like the market analysis and the competitive analysis, that out of that then comes the refinement of your table of contents. It may even be the beginning of your table of contents. Maybe you have no idea at all what's going in the book, really. You just have an idea. And so then you do these analyses and then you do your table of contents and then you do chapter outlines, right? And so, and in the author training manual, I also take you the steps through the steps of, you know, evaluating your platform and beginning to work on a marketing plan. And all of that done early is good because then you're like, okay, so I know these people are my market and I know I have to have an audience in place. That's your author platform. And so while I'm writing the book, I need to be building my platform. And so now I know that these are my people and I can figure out where they exist. Like, where do they hang out? Are they on Facebook? Are they on TikTok? Where are they? And now I can focus my attention, my audience building attention there. And not only that, I can then build that into my marketing plan, because you have to have a marketing plan no matter how you publish, because you're going to be the one doing all the promotion. So you see how it all builds together.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's the scary part for me is that whole marketing side, because I'm not, you know, I'm just an individual who wants to write a book that helps other people, you know, who've gone through similar situations, mostly under, have gone through or lived through domestic violence situations or, and that whole marketing part and building a platform, that I'm still trying to wrap my head around, because I'm an introvert and I'm not very social, and I'm not on, you know, I mean, I have Instagram accounts, I have Facebook accounts, but I'm literally that person who doesn't post anything but likes a lot of stuff.
Okay. So you have to find things that work for you. So one could be writing articles for people or blogging. So I'm a huge fan, if you don't know that already, of blogging. I feel like social media is a waste of time if you're not sharing your own content, right? And so what's better for a writer than to write a blog post and share that with people? And plus it drives them back to your website, and it gives your website the search engine optimization it needs, because your blog posts are going to be, for instance, on domestic violence, and it's going to build the keywords, right? And so are things you can do that don't require being out there a lot. Like, you don't have to do live video, but you could have a Facebook page or begin posting this stuff to your Instagram, you know, account. You can do little quote cards, you know, or thing, you know, helpful little tips for those who suffer from domestic violence. But I would also look at it. So when I talk about writing for change, I talk little about platform and more and audience even, and more about community.
Okay.
So as an introvert, are you so introverted that you don't like being in a group of people who all want to discuss? Like, would you want to go live in a group where you could help people with, you know, related to domestic violence?
Like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would love to share. And I, so I have this, cause I'm a CPA, and I started this nonprofit organization, which I'm in the initial stages of working on, helping domestic violence survivors work through their personal finances. And so, you know, I am starting to build a platform there, but that's what got me, you know, starting to feel anxiety on building this platform in terms of my own authorship.
Okay, so first of all, I immediately went to, after you do your memoir, maybe you should do the book, or vice versa, do a book on the accounting aspect of, you know, just like you said, as an accountant, what's your perspective on domestic violence and what we need to know about money, right?
Yeah, it seems
I'm sure there's a whole lot of stuff around that. What were you gonna say,
Jerry? Seems like a huge issue
to
me. That part of what would keep a woman trapped in a domestic violence relationship, domestically violent relationship, is the question about handling her own finances. And it sounds like a vicious circle. I mean, I'm not part of that community at all, but it just strikes me as a natural, sounds like a real valuable niche.
Yeah. And you know, there are so many women who are stuck in their marriage, in unhappy marriages, just because of the money. Like, they don't know how they're going to support themselves. So if you're already building community around that, and is that something you want to keep doing? Like, is that something that you're passionate about?
I am, but I, you know, I mean, I love writing, and I had gone through like my first couple years of college, having, you know, all of my English professors doing creative writing courses, and that having been something that people said that was something I'm talented in. And I didn't pursue it because I didn't believe in my abilities. And I have so many ideas, and I've gone through so much, and I want to help other people and make an impact. And so I thought through a memoir that would be helpful. And I didn't even think of, you know, the personal finance, like writing a book about that.
So there's so much you could do. So if you like creative writing, so here's always my strategy for people, especially those who have a broad interest in terms of what they would like to write. So mm-hmm. like if you would like to write a novel or short stories as well, if you can, and it, you don't have to do this forever, but if you can write your memoir and then you write something about personal finance for those, you know, stuck in a mm-hmm. situation of domestic violence, right? However you're going to do that. And then let's say you wrote a novel, but the main character is struggling with a domestic violence situation. And maybe you even write two or three novels where there's always that element of that in there, or even someone who's just trapped in a marriage and doesn't have the money to get out, or what, you know, doesn't think they can, whatever. Mm-hmm. You see how now you create a body of work where the theme stays the same. And now you can have a website where, you know, your author website that says something, because when you get to somebody's website, authors make the mistake of just saying, you know, I'm gonna mispronounce your name, Eleanor Victorioso, is that correct?
Yeah, okay.
You know, author. Well, unless I know your work, that tells me nothing. Like, I have no reason to stay on your website. And you have 6 or 7 seconds to capture somebody's attention before they go away and don't ever come back. So I want you to have a tagline that says, mm-hmm. this is, I'm a writer, but this is what I write about. Like, this is how I help you through my writing. And so your main thing can be writing, and you don't have to stick on that topic forever. But do you see how if you build a bit of a body right. work around it, now you're developing an audience, and it's going to be much easier for you to get to either self-publish or traditionally publish other books on different topics because you already have a reputation. Then to go back to the marketing where we started, if I were you and you don't mind talking about the personal finance and all that, I would probably start like a Facebook group and maybe a LinkedIn group or something mm-hmm. where that is your topic, because you are gonna attract tons of women who want help figuring out how to get out of these marriages or relationships and be right. financially sound, or at least find their way to some kind of income or whatever, right? And so it becomes just your base. And later, if you want to branch out into something different, you can. And I would be, since you primarily want to write, I would be writing articles and blog posts and trying to find online journals or whatever, you know, anywhere you can to write about anything related to this. It doesn't have to be all personal finance, but
okay.
use your writing. But if you're already creating community around the personal finance aspect, I think I agree with Jerry. I just think that is a really necessary niche, and you will attract people very quickly into that.
This is amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Does that feel
doable? My mind is blown right now. Yeah. I just, cause I think I've been, it's funny because I want to make an impact, but I'm so stuck in my insecurity and in like in failing almost that I can't even get out of that to you know, do any of these things that you mentioned, or even to have brainstormed those things. So right.
Well, yeah. That's why I'm here, but you also joined the Inspired Creator community. So my suggestion to you is, so just finishing up in the next 2 months, July and August, the charge sessions, you can show up for, we'll talk about this because we're going to meet and talk about this anyway, but that's the personal growth part of it, right? The high performance coaching is the personal growth part that's going to get you unstuck. And Jerry can speak to this too, but I would suggest that you go back. Jerry was my first member ever, so he's been with me a while. But I would suggest that when you have time, you go back and you do the core sessions, the 12 okay. core sessions. Just start at the beginning. We did three kind of bonus sessions that were, you can do that, listen to those too. There were only three of us, but they were super interesting, especially if you have a spiritual nature. But just the actual core sessions. Session 1 is on focal points, two on clarity, just work through those 12 and listen to the sessions and do the worksheets. And that's going to not only catch you up, which we'll talk about more when you and I meet, but it's going to help you start moving. Like one of the sessions is on courage. So it's just going to help you start developing the foundation to move through your fears. And we all have them. Even me, we all have them.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm glad that was helpful. I always love it when my mind goes, I got all these.
My mind is like that right now. I'm still just trying to like process it.
Good news is it's being recorded. So you can go back.
Okay. I mean, I have another question whenever I can jump in or.
Let me just see if Jerry has a question.
Yeah. I don't have a question. I got all my questions answered last hour, but more than all my questions answered. I got all my question answered and I got a gentle butt kick last hour. So, but I would like to strongly suggest to Eleanor, especially since you're at a more beginning stage than Rita, where I see, you know, where I was when I met Nina, when I got involved with this, was in between the two of you. I had this strong idea for what I wanted to write a book about. And I had written little bits of it here and there, but I wasn't real clear. But I really had a sense that I wanted to do this particular topic. And going through that author training manual, this is a pitch for the author training manual, and it's not an affiliate link. I don't get any percentage. It was a great experience. It made it very clear to me that I had luckily picked a niche that I still am to this moment convinced is profitable and needed and valuable, and I could talk to an agent. I don't have my platform built. I'm working on that. That's the piece I'm missing, and I'm working on it now. But if I had a good platform, I would be willing to talk to an agent at the drop of a hat about what my niche is, why it's valuable, why it's needed, and why it's going to sell. And it just made it so clear. So I strongly encourage you, Eleanor, to get a copy of that book and work through it. It makes it a step-by-step thing. And okay, now do this and now do that. And frankly, I didn't like doing all those things, but they were valuable. It was like, oh yeah, this is what I need to do.
Yeah, I don't like doing it either, to be honest. Yeah. And I hate writing book proposals, and I'm happier to edit them than to write them. I don't write them for anyone else because I don't want to write them even for me. But Jerry, when you went through the process and you were talking about, you know, market and, you know, talking to an agent, going through the process, did you end up more confident?
Absolutely.
How did that impact your writing?
Oh, it's like much stronger. It's like knowing that this is the right thing just makes all the difference. It's like, you know, where Rita is right now, we can tell her, but she doesn't really know. Unless you've done that work, I don't think you know what's out there and what you're looking for and what's needed. And if there's a hole that you can fill with valuable information. And yes, you know that you had a meaningful experience, Rita, and I'm not taking away from that at all. And it sounds to me like you've got a really great idea and more than an idea, a great developed project. But knowing what the competition looks like and knowing what's out there available for other people, you know, in your same, trying to answer that same question, makes a made a huge difference for me. I mean, my book is about affirmations, and yes, there are a lot of books out there about affirmations, and my book is about writing your own affirmations. I have yet to find one. I haven't found one other book that talks about how to write your own affirmations. And I think that's a value. I can document why I believe it's a valuable skill that we all need to know how to do. But I didn't, until I went searching for it, I assumed it was that there were books out there. There weren't. There still aren't.
Yep. So there you go. Pitch for my book, but. All right. So Jerry, you don't have a question? Okay. So Rita, we're back to you.
Yeah. You said special sales. What did you mean by, like, how do you explain that in a book proposal, special sales?
So also, I think in the nonfiction, in the archive, in the Nonfiction Writers University is a session with, I'm going to have to look him up because I can't think of his name, about special sales, I think. Special. Usually I can find him right away because he's the main guy talking about it. But of course I'm not. So if I find it, I'll let you know, but you could look in there because there was, I'm pretty sure I interviewed him. Anyway, special book sales are when you have a way to sell large quantities of books or quantities of books outside of bookstores or Amazon or anything like that. So that could be to universities, to schools, to groups. Especially if you are a speaker, a lot of times this is a good thing. You know, you can say, I'm willing to buy so many books every year in order to, you know, sell them at my events, or, you know, when I go to an event and speak, you know, I can require that they buy books for all their, you know, part of the deal I make is that I require that they buy books for the audience members, anything like that. Like, you know, I can sell them to hospitals, doctor's offices. These are all special sales because they're outside of the bookstore realm.
Okay. Makes sense. Thank you.
No worries. Other questions? I'm still looking for that guy.
I actually have a question about the content that you have in your book. Like, let's say you have an NDA, you've signed an NDA that you can't speak about something that has happened to you. Can you speak about it in a book?
All right, so hold on. Let me refocus because I was still trying to find that guy. Okay, so you're saying if you have an NDA, how can mm-hmm. you talk about it in your book?
So like, let's talk about like the whole, you know, Me Too movement and how women have signed NDAs, right? To not publicly speak about or share some of their experiences that have happened. Does an NDA stand? And maybe this is something that I ask like a lawyer.
So I'm not a lawyer. And so I'll say that first. I'm not a lawyer. And there also is in the archive a session with Robert Pym, and he is my literary attorney. So do a search and see if you can find that.
P-I-M-M.
He also is my go-to. So if you are looking for a literary attorney, to do a search on Robert Pym, you will find him. If you don't, let me know. I'll give you his email address. But my understanding is that you have to, even if you don't use names, you have to be super careful that you can't, that people don't feel like they've been identified.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Other than that, I can't really guide you much because I don't want to guide you incorrectly. And right. so I would probably email Robert Pym and just ask him. You know, he might be willing to answer it in just an email. He's a very kind guy. Tell him you came from my group. Tell him you came from my group and that you just have this question about NDAs and if you're, and you're writing a memoir, and is there any way to talk about, you know, so I'm assuming it's other, it's not you, it's other people, right? That have NDAs that you want to include in your book, or is this you?
No, it's me.
Oh, it's you. Okay. So yeah. So tell him that, tell him, you know, I signed an NDA and I don't know how, what I can say about this.
Okay.
Because the problem is the people are like, well, you wrote about this and you didn't use my name, but everybody knows it's me. Like, we're only married to me. How is anyone not going to figure out that it's me?
Right.
What I want to know is whether if you haven't used names or whatever, you know, you whether you're in the clear. The other aspect is, yeah, sometimes people will fictionalize their books for this reason.
You know, I read that.
But it still opens you up to some challenges because people can still say, you wrote that novel and it was about me. You know, I know it was about our marriage. And so this is where you really, it's best to pay the money to a literary attorney. And Bob is very careful. I have a client who used him extensively because he was writing about Ferrari, like the company Ferrari. And, did not want to get sued by Ferrari. And Bob was very, very meticulous in what he told him. And then my client was able to pick and choose what he wanted to, you know, where he was willing to take risks. So I would highly recommend that you pay the money and you have at least one session with Bob.
Okay.
And it is, I'll say he, I can, him, I can probably find and put in the chat pretty quickly. There we go. Oops.
I'm clearly not an attorney either, but it would seem to me that if somebody hires an attorney to craft an NDA for them, to protect them from this kind of thing, they've got you're writing a book about it covered. I'm not saying don't talk to the guy, it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
But
right.
I mean, that, if you can write a book about it, it was a lousy NDA.
Right. There might be a lousy lawyer.
Well, there might be ways she can do it, and
yeah,
it's worth a conversation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worth a conversation. Absolutely. I'm not trying to discourage you, but my 1.5 cents worth.
Okay, so I put in, Bob Pym is in there, rgpym.com. And also, Brian Judd is the guy that I interviewed on Special Sales. I'm pretty sure I interviewed him. I kind of remember interviewing him. There was 7 years of archive there. So, but he changed the name of his company, and it's this bookpass.org that I put in there. Okay.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Anything else? Don't be shy. I mean, just jump in if you've got one. Jerry has no questions today.
You got them all.
You didn't really
open my mouth.
I made Jerry new commitments about his writing and about his health. So
she made me do it.
I did. I made. But you didn't really ask me any questions. I asked you, and then that's where we ended up. So
yes, I'm.
So I'm just saying you didn't ask any questions. But if you don't have any, that's fine. No pressure. And we end these whenever there, you know, if there are no questions, there are no questions, then we're done. Sometimes I have to end at a certain time, but anyway, so more questions.
I'm definitely going to contact you, Nina, about the book proposal. So for sure, I need help with that. So it's awesome. Not a question, but it's an affirmation.
Okay. I'm going to see if I can find you the link. Any other questions? No? All right, let me see if I can get you that link real fast. Amazing how it can come up right away, and as soon as you type another letter, it goes away. Okay, so here's the link for that. And you'll see there, you know, it's basically by, I mean, you can hire me by the hour, or you can just, you know, by number of pages. And it's a developmental edit. It's not a, you know, I go through and I just say, this is what you still need, or this isn't done correctly, or whatever. I'd suggest that before you hire me, you go into the university and you get download the Easy Schmeasy book proposal template.
I saw that. I think I saw that. I didn't get to reading it, but I will.
That's fine. So just download that so that way you can make sure it's formatted correctly and all that kind of stuff, because otherwise I get into all of that. You know, okay. Oh, it's single space. It should be double space. Like, I'll spend a lot of time doing things that, you know, telling you things I don't.
Now, is there like when you start sending it out, like the book proposal, is there like a list of publishers that you send to, or editors, or how do you go about that part?
Okay, so you need a query letter. So
right.
So once you have your query letter done, you're going to do research. Writer's Digest used to have a great book that came out every year, Writer's Market. They also had a guide to publishers or something, or agents, guide to agents. When they went under, that I think went under too, because I haven't seen any new additions. So if you Google online, you know, there are some associations for agents, and you can look there. You can look by, you know, I would probably put in literary agent and autism and see, you know, you might find that there's a couple agents who they have autistic kids or whatever, that's an interest of theirs. They're going to be your top agents because they're going to get it, right? Or special needs, you know, special needs children or whatever, you know, however you want to phrase it. But I would do a bunch of Google searches looking for agents who've actually specifically said they're interested in that.
Okay.
If you can't find any, then you have to get very clear on, you know, what niche you're in, you know, what market, you know, it's a memoir. Memoirs are very competitive. So you're going to want to find an agent who is interested in a memoir that's, you know, you're going to have to think about your themes and your topics beyond just autism. Like, how would you qualify that? You know, parenting, for instance, if they're interested in parenting, that would be, you know, an agent you'd want to contact. So you don't want to just do a kind of global search. You want to find agents who are interested in the kind of memoir you've written, mm-hmm. and that also might be willing to represent you on some other books if you're interested in writing more books.
Yeah.
And then you're going to send out, I do not recommend sending out to like 50 agents at once, because you never know what kind of feedback you're going to get. And I have a client, it took us a year, but what happened was he sent out, I think 10 query letters. And of those 10, he got, he didn't get any acceptances, but he got two that were kind of interested, but gave him feedback. And one in particular said, I'm not seeing, it was a creative nonfiction piece, and like something about the storyline. Like, I'm not really getting the story being about, like, who's it really about? Mm-hmm. And we looked at it and went, oh my God, like, he's right. We need to revamp. And that required he rewrite some chapters, and like we redid the proposal and the query and everything to show as a storyline. We weren't showing the storyline as much as we were talking about other things related to this story. And so that one piece of feedback made a huge difference. Then he sent out another 10 or 15 and we got a little more feedback from somebody, I can't remember who, and we again tweaked just a little bit and then he landed an agent. But it took quite a bit of, you know, time of just refining and refining and being willing to hear what people were saying. So if you send to 100 agents, you've just knocked off 100 agents that you can't contact again.
Right, got it.
So you don't want to do that. So send out, and I usually recommend in batches of 5 or 10. Mm-hmm. And some of them, it will take, oh God, I had an agent, I knew her like personally, it took her 6 months one time to respond to me. And she was like, oh, this is really interesting. Let's talk about it. And I was like, I'm already represented. Like, what are you thinking? But it happened. So give yourself a deadline. Like say, okay, I'm sending it to 10. And of the, you know, the majority, you know, 7 of the 10 or 6 of the 10 say they respond within 30 days. Okay. So give yourself.
Every 30 days then you're saying?
I would probably give myself 6 weeks because they don't always do 30 days, but I would keep track. And when you've heard from more than half of them, then send out some more.
Okay.
So it's a lengthy process, but that's what I recommend because you just never know. You could have a query letter that just, if you just tweaked it a little bit, is going to pique someone's interest, and the way you've written it, it doesn't.
Now, do you also critique query letters?
Yeah.
Okay.
They usually out of the book proposals overview.
Sorry?
They flow really nicely out of the book proposal overview. So if you've got your overview really good, then we can usually condense a lot of that into a query letter. But yeah, I will review those as well.
Okay. Well, I have both, I guess. Oh, sorry, Jerry.
Go ahead.
I have both. So perhaps I would show you both, I guess, or I'm not sure. Whatever you think.
I can't remember whether now I still have the, hang on. Whether that page I sent you has query letter review. If not, I just do it as a like a 1 hour consult.
Okay.
It doesn't have the query letter. It used to have query letter too, but I would just do it. Yeah, it doesn't usually take me much more than an hour. So I would just do it at that rate.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, Jerry.
It's okay. So I put in the chat a resource that I found very useful for finding potential agents. It's called the Association of Author Representatives, AAR. And there are, I don't know how many altogether, I'd say thousands of agents there. And you can pick a theme, a keyword phrase, like I think it was personal development was the theme that most resonated for me. And there were literally hundreds of agents who self-identified as accepting proposals in that area. And they have a little bio and they have a little history of their work and that kind of thing. And what other, there were other peripheral areas. You know, you can't search for more than one of these terms, but there were other terms that were meaningful to me. And if they like, there was, this one's got two or three of them. Okay, that's great. I can't search for it that way, but I can see them once I start to look at them. So I narrowed it down and got a list of about 100. And they had their contact information and their preferred contacts and a photo and everything. It's all there.
Yeah, so that's the site I go to most often, because the other thing is that it used to be that you were always told if the agent isn't a member of AARP, you don't want to use them. That said, my former agent, I can't find anyone from their literary agency listed there. So they must have decided they didn't want to spend the money to be there. So I was kind of surprised. Well, now we're split, so not so surprised. anyway, it's a well-known organization. I put in the chat also an article by Jane Friedman, which mentions a few other places where you can go, like Duotope or whatever it's called, and Publishers Marketplace. So it's a research job. It's just a research job. And, you know, make a list with your top 25 and then, you know, another 75 or more. Because it could, you know, you listen to people like Jack Canfield talk about how long it took them to find a publisher. They didn't find an agent. They ended up finding a small publisher. But I don't, this is the toss up and you have to decide. I can't tell you what to do, but there are two ways to go. One is to contact your top 5 or 10 agents right off the bat, because of course they're your top pick. However, if your query letter is not 100% or there's something inherently wrong with your book proposal, then you're throwing away those cards right off the bat, right? Mm-hmm. So I tend to put them like after the first 10 because you don't have to be in a hurry. If you get some accept, you know, if you get a couple agents who say, yes, send me the book proposal. Okay. You know, your query's working. Okay. See how they do with the book proposal. If they go, well, this is a problem with the book proposal, then you want to fix that. Okay. Right.
I've seen some just ask for book proposal. Don't ask for the query. So.
Yeah. And some have a form on their site and don't want everything.
Yes.
As much as you can, give them what they're asking for.
Yeah.
But I have often told my clients, so I'll tell you the same, if they're saying on their site, just send us the proposal and we need market, you know, the overview and the markets and your table of contents and your chapter summaries and nothing else, I would probably give them two documents and I would say, I have a full proposal, yeah, or one, but I would probably send a note with that, you know, my email saying, I saw your requirements. I actually have a full book proposal and I've taken the liberty of sending you all of it. Or I have extracted what you asked for and put it in a document, but I've taken the liberty of also giving you my full proposal. Now you risk pissing some of them off. On the other hand, you risk getting a yes because you've done the work, more work than they've asked for. And they actually need that work. To propose to a literary, to a publishing company, they need all of the information in your proposal.
Now, when you're saying like your top 10 or whatever it is, like I have no idea who my top 10 would be. Like they're all the same to me.
And then and you just start submitting.
Like small press, not small press. I don't know.
You're going to let the literary agent decide on that. The small presses, if you don't find a literary agent, you can submit to them on your own. And what I was going to say was also, you don't have to say yes right away. If you have, let's say two people who say, let's say you did have favorites. Okay. And you have your top 10 list. And you send to not your top 10 list and two of those agents say yes, they're interested after they look at your proposal, you can tell them I've got other submissions out and I will get back with you. Can we have a conversation so I get to understand who you are and how you work and whatever while I'm waiting for these other ones to come in? And then you can actually just go ahead and send some more, right, to your top 10. But okay. It's so easy, and I was there too, to feel like if somebody said yes, that's, you know, your only option, and it's not always your only option.
Okay. Jerry, it's just hard to know. It's hard to know what's the best option for you.
Yeah, so I was under the impression that I wouldn't have any idea what makes a good agent, what makes a bad agent, or any, and I still don't. But after going through that database and reading a lot of those bios, there were some of them like, you know what? I'd like to have a cup of coffee with this person. And that feels like an important thing to me because I'm going to be working with this person.
Yeah.
And if I don't feel like I can relate to them and that they can relate to me, it's getting off on the wrong foot right away.
Yeah.
You want to interview them. If they will not allow you to do that, like if they won't get on the phone with you or on a Zoom call with you, then that's a problem. Okay. And I can tell you that my last agent, he went from being very accessible to being a lot busier and being inaccessible, and also very, this is how we're doing it. And I was like, I was going to fire him anyway. He actually fired me because I asked him for an update. I said, I want to know it's been two freaking years. Give me a new update on the publishers that you've submitted to. And he gave it to me and he said, I'm gone. And I was like, fine, because and I told other people, like in the publishing industry, other agents, and they were like, really? Because that's his job, is to keep me informed, right? So you want some, and I tell you that just because people change, situations change, but you want to start out getting to know somebody. I happen to have known him some, and he changed over the years, but actually some of it, I probably, had I been more paying more attention, I would have seen some of the tendencies in him, but it doesn't matter. I've been through my first agent. It was he and his wife, but his wife took me on. Then he took me on. I had another agent for one project, which I would never do again that way. Then I had another agent. She ended up, she was a cop originally. She went back to being a cop. Like, you just never know. But the point that Jerry's making is so important. You have to have a working relationship with this person. You have questions you need to ask them. And when the time comes, we can get into that. But you know, you want to know things like, how accessible are you? Can I get you on the phone if I need to? If I prefer to have a conversation rather than lots of email, are you open to that? Will you keep me apprised of the project? I want to know, even if it's been rejected.
Thank you. Very helpful. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, lots of questions you can ask. And Mike Larson, who was my second agent, the husband, has a great book, where is it, called How to Get a Literary Agent. Well, that's very Mike. Mike is very, nonfiction books should tell you exactly what they are. His other book is How to Write a Book Proposal. Well, the last edition of it was revamped by somebody else, not by him. But, yeah.
I think the important thing for me to keep in mind, and for all of us to keep in mind here, is that these people, these agents, they're working for us. Mm-hmm. We're not working for them. Mm-hmm. They're working for us. Mm-hmm. And yeah. If they're not willing to do that.
So there's a woman.
I got enough aggravation dealing with a critic in my own head. I don't need. No, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So there's a woman that I interviewed her once, also in the Nonfiction Writers University. I'm trying to find her email. And I can't find it, but she's has another group, mostly, I think, journalism. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I saved an email of hers because she said she had just signed with a new literary agent, but actually two. She said, she had fired her other one. She said, I was really convinced I was never going to have another literary agent. And then I went out and I submitted queries and proposals, and I spoke to different agents, and I have signed contracts with two, one for fiction and one for nonfiction. She said, who would have thought? Everyone says get one agent. Not true. You can have different agents for different things. And she said, the contracts I signed with them are only for one book project, because if I don't like them, I'm gone. And I don't want to be tied in to a deal with somebody that I don't want to work with. Mm-hmm. So this is another reason to grab someone like Bob Pym when you get even a contract from a literary agency and have it reviewed. It really is. I mean, you just don't know what's written into these. My first literary agent, it was all written in normal, it was written for anybody. Anybody could understand that contract, but the majority of them are not like that. Okay. And there are things like with this last agent of mine, I had to have the contract reviewed after the fact to find out whether, so there was one publishing house that was still looking at the book proposal, and I had a relationship with that publisher or the executive publisher or whatever. And so I was able to communicate with her about it. And she asked me specifically, if I take on this project, do you still have some sort of financial commitment to your agent? And I said, I don't think so, but I'm not sure. And so I had to have my contract looked at to make sure I wasn't missing something and trying to read it, that gave him any financial rights to me selling it to a publisher where he had submitted it, mm-hmm. which it turned out he didn't. But so there are a lot of things like that, that it's worth, if you're going to sign a contract, it's worth spending $300-$400 on a yeah. lawyer.
Yeah.
Or more, you know, so, say I'm going to spend $1,000 just to make sure that I don't get into trouble down the road.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. Thank you. Thank you both.
Yeah.
And good luck, Eleanor, as well.
Thank you. Same to you.
Are we all good for today? Anyone have any last things they need answered? Addressed? No? Okay. Well, I appreciate you all. As I always say, I couldn't do, you know, my life's work if it weren't for all of you here allowing me to do it. So thank you so much for being part of my community and for allowing, you know, giving me the honor of working with you.
Thank you.
We will next, so we'll, in a month from now, we'll do another, well, no, that's not true. So we do author coaching the second week of the month. So that's second week of July, and then we will have our next high performance coaching session. It's been delayed for the Inspired Creator Community. That's been delayed to the 12th because it was supposed to be on the 5th. And for those of us here in the States, that is a holiday. So I probably could have done it, but I figured there were other people who had other things to do on Independence Day. So we meet on the 12th. So 2 weeks back to back. Okay. So I will hopefully see you all again in a few weeks.
Thank you. Delayed it just for me, Nina, because I'm going to be on the road on the 5th.
No, sorry. You did weigh in, I think. You were one of the people who weighed in on what to do about the day. So yeah. So anyway, I will talk to you all again the second week of July. So until then, as always, and achieve more inspired results. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.